All right, welcome back to the Grizzle Pod, episode 35. Tom George here, Scott Willis. We are Grizzle. Welcome back. Scott, how goes?
Going well, Tom. How about you?
Yeah, good, man. So since the last episode, lots of volatility along the way. We're gonna address that and many other topics, that commodities, markets, all of it, Scott, all of it. First of all, we have to thank our wonderful sponsors here, Y-Charts. Scott, they power us up for everything they do, and that's on the fundamental chart side. If you follow our Twitter, you can see how we use it in dynamic ways. That's ycharts.com. Hit them up. That's where you'll find their platform, and you can get a free trial to give it a spin yourself. And also the GRZZ ETF. We're talking about growth and innovation at a reasonable price, because at these times, Scott, you got to be price sensitive. You got to think, hey, listen, I want the growth, but I want the, you know, I can't be just buying anything under the moon. And, you know, we are the antithesis of Cathie Wood, very different. She wrote a letter to the Fed, Scott. She an open letter to the Fed asking.
I wonder if they got it.
Asking them to stop the pain. Stop the pain. It's enough. It's enough, she said.
Sounds more like a pleading letter than anything else.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, the reality is with rates have risen, potentially can go up more. It's exposed what we always believed with the science fair aspect of her overall holdings, you know, the ARK franchise as a whole. And we believe the pain's not done yet. If you're invested in things that have kind of exponential valuations that, you know, that can't be anchored, Scott, that's not a good thing.
No, exactly. I'll give you a good example of what happens to things like space travel in a market like this. If you can buy a treasury bond for 2 years out, you know, and make 3% on it, why are you going to take the risk of space travel that may not happen for 10 years and could run out of money in the meantime? So that's the investor psychology that's happening, where when the cost of money goes up, the what you need to give up to take risks just becomes exponentially more expensive. And you see people just, they're getting a little bit of scared, getting conservative, and that's not good for risk assets.
No, exactly. So, you know, risk assets like those, right? Like I'm talking moon assets.
Yeah, like the high end of the spectrum where you're losing lots of money and nothing's going to happen anytime soon.
Right now you're seeing a capitulation en masse on Twitter. Forgetting the dude's name, but like they're basically, you can lump all of the VC dudes in the same category. All the venture capital guys are all like, you know, basically it was a decade of free money. And a lot of these business models, Scott, they said, listen, they only actually operate on free money. So, you know, that's a little bit of a headache there for many of these companies that got capitalized. Like, so what we're seeing right now for most investors, you're seeing the carnage, let's call it Cathie Wood's, like, you know, speculative portfolio in real time. You're seeing that all happen on the markets. But what's not happening, and we're not seeing, is that a lot of these venture capital firms, they have investments very similar to Cathie. These companies have typically burned a lot of cash, Scott. Like, they're going to be at a point in a couple of years where they're going to hit the wall and not have money.
Yeah, and there's some that are probably going to hit the wall sometime soon. And people aren't open to writing checks right now. So you'll hear about more private companies running into trouble. We've only heard about maybe 10 or so, but there'll be more to come.
Exactly. And one thing we do keep, our eyes, is seeing how these guys are talking on Twitter. And these guys, Scott, these guys are like the most bravado, you know what I mean? I'm a VC, you know what I mean? Like jokey jokes, yada, yada. Now these guys literally are like, they're like, you know, it's going to be tough, you know. And Scott, they basically were funding things that had no pathway to revenue for 5+ years. And if anyone knows what we've always been talking about, listen, at the reasonable price, you have to have a pathway to revenue. And anyone who doesn't is in deep doo-doo.
You need some discipline here. And the worst that can happen to a startup is 5 years of not needing to worry whether you make money or not, and then having to quickly figure it out. The better model is you figure out how you make money, then you take on tons of money to grow the business. Yep. And say you lose money for a while just to grow really fast. Well, you still know how your business works, and you can, you know, torque it up and cut down on expenses when times get tough.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Scott, important announcement, two actually important announcements I have to make. Ooh. Let me start with one. We did an incredible piece last week. If you haven't watched it, please go to our YouTube, the Grizzle YouTube, and watch it. The newest member of the Grizzle fam, Marco Rubin, quarterback this wonderful episode with one of our favorite, and who happens to be a green chicken. It's the history of energy shocks with Doomberg. Scott, you really can't talk about the future of energy without understanding where we've been. And this was an incredibly concise, well-delivered episode. It has a ton of visuals, ton of understanding. It is it is fundamental energy reading. And viewing, actually, Scott. View it. Listen to it. You know.
Yeah, it's basically 10 minutes of your time will then help all these things you're going to read in the news about energy make a lot of sense.
Yes, and that is on our YouTube channel. Got a ton of great feedback on it. We've got another episode about to drop as well in the coming days. So please, if you're not already, please do subscribe to the Grizzle YouTube channel. That is where we're producing fine content on two fronts, Scott. The Energy Fix and our wonderful conference series that everyone knows us for. Scott, we got it. Next week, man, you're coming to Toronto. Let's go. We're talking about the Grizzle Battery Metals one-on-one conference. This is big. October 20th. We've got a stack lineup, as always, guys. If you want to understand the future of energy, that's what we're cutting. We're breaking it down every which way. You got to understand the important role of metals in this future energy complex. It's not enough to know, the Teslas, the Rivians. That's the end. That's just what comes out the end. If you don't have what's in the front, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you need to understand the entire value chain. We've been doing a lot of work on it because it's one of those, investment cycles where you can get 10 years or more out of it. That's what you're looking for. You're not looking for the little trades. So we've been going through, you know how Grizzle does it. Leaders in every sector that matters. We've done commodities. We just did uranium, smashing success. This one's going to be battery metals. This is going to be, I'm very excited for this. We're going to learn a lot. You should tune in. You're going to learn a lot.
Yeah, we're really excited. You know, it's been a lot of fun actually putting it together. It's incredible. And that's super stoked for that. Grizzle Battery Metals one-on-one.
Well, say the date on that, Tom, again.
Yeah, so October 20th, 10 a.m. on the Eastern Standard Time. That's what we're doing. So that's stay tuned for that. All of it's about to drop. We'll send email blasts out. You guys will get all the details. But if you're not subscribed, please do subscribe to the Grizzle. A, the YouTube, you're going to get all that. And then B, our email, that's grizzle.com/subscribe. And you get all of it. So Scott, also, those are two key aspects. Now I mentioned in the last pod, but we've been fortunate enough to push forward. We are now going to expand our podcast to include one-on-ones with industry leaders in all the industries we cover. Very excited for that to drop. Our first one, very exciting. It's gonna be later this week. We're gonna drop that. That's with Largo, and that was a fantastic interview with Alberto.
Yeah. So everyone, this is a battery metal where we talk about battery metals. You hear about copper and cobalt and some other ones. They're all whenever there's a news article written, it talks about that. But there's another important one that's under the radar. We don't think it's gonna be under the radar for long, and it's called vanadium. So. Yep. We brought on basically the number one global expert in vanadium, and he's going to tell us more about it and the potential for that metal to become key in all the renewables.
Yeah. So, Alberto Arias, a fantastic conversation, around the broader, dynamic of the future of energy. And then, talking just around the vanadium pillar, but the goal with this is just reach out, get the dynamic insights from the leaders, make sure that everyone understands, how we're thinking about the world and the people behind those leading the change. So that's our one-on-one CEO series. We're excited for that. We're gonna have some. The schedule is already jam-packed, Scott. We got a ton of great people coming through, which gives it. Obviously, you guys, Scott and I have been doing this for, well over a year and a half now, the pod in this format, which has been a lot of fun for Scott and I. But as much as we like talking to each other, one thing we love is talking to great leaders in industry.
That is very, very true.
We're not going to have all the answers. We're there to put our tentacles out and learn as much as possible. So that is exciting. Scott, Hit them with the agenda. So there was a lot of, you know, a lot of things that are coming down the pipe. I had to make sure everyone understands the good, you know, the train of content that Grizzle is producing. You know, CNN.
Yeah, sometimes we like to use the podcast to update you because we're always working on lots of things. So sometimes it's good to have one place to get you up to speed on all the things coming down the pipe from Grizzle.
Yeah, it's super exciting. And it's, you know, with Margo on board, we've just been supercharged in terms of just how we're thinking about content. And it's the goal is to deliver it in formats, in ways that just keep pushing the envelope. I can sincerely say the history of Energy Shocks with Doomberg, nobody on CNBC, nobody, you know, Bloomberg, nobody's producing content like that because it's not in their wheelhouse. They're not reaching out. It's always like these sound bites. It's the 6 o'clock news, this headline, that headline. You know, come on. You got to step back and produce stuff that will sit vintage on the bookshelf and say, I'm going to watch that episode again, Scott. What did I learn there? I want it to be your library for understanding and learning.
I love it.
All right, Scott, what's the agenda?
All right, so we're going to kick things off with a little bit of cannabis because we got, you know, some potentially big news out of the cannabis industry. If you were looking at stock performance, that industry went to the moon last week. Will it last? So I'm going to take you through the weeds a little bit on what that news from President Biden means for cannabis from an investor point of view and from a political point of view. Then we're going to talk about OPEC. There was some news out of that group last week about further supply cuts. We're going to take you through what it means from to the oil market and also what it means for the relationship of the U.S. versus Saudi Arabia. And then lastly, you know, here I have a soft spot in my heart for the software as a service sector. It's a subsector of tech. It's the companies that lose the most money but are growing the fastest. And that sector actually tells me interesting things about risk in the market. So I'm going to do a quick review on what I'm seeing there and what that tells me about whether we're in a risk-on environment or whether investors are still hunkered down and not willing to take on too much risk at this point.
Amazing. Yeah, all great topics. Scott, let's hit it off. Cannabis, what you got?
All right, so the news last week in a nutshell, Biden said he's going to pardon a lot of people who got arrested for cannabis offenses that never should have gone to jail. So that's a very good thing.
Yeah.
So that's huge. But investors, that doesn't move the needle as much for investors, even though that's probably the most important piece of news that came out. Mm-hmm. But he also said that cannabis, which is in Schedule One of drug treaties, so it's considered kind of one of the worst drugs with no known medical use. And Biden was said, why is it there? It should be somewhere else. So what he's going to initiate is a review to see if it should be descheduled, which that basically means it's Schedule One. Well, is it going to move to Schedule Two or Schedule Three? It doesn't mean legalization. It just means it's going to move to a different list. Now, I'll take you through what that process looks like. Because initially, when he tweeted this out, the stocks were up 20, 40, 60%. Since then, you've seen they've given off a lot of those gains. And it's because when people dug through how this works, and I'll explain it to you, it could be a little bit of a longer road to get to that even descheduling where they decide that maybe it shouldn't be Schedule One, it should be two or three. So here's how it works. The Attorney General and the Secretary of Health and Human Services are involved. Either of them can start this process, or the President can start the process, or the legislature can vote to start the process. Now, the issue is Democrats and Republicans are pretty much locked. You see that Democrats, even though they hold the majority in the Senate and the House, they're not really able to get anything done. Nothing's been happening since the presidential election. So it's not happening that way.
Yeah.
So Biden's starting it the other way. He goes to the Attorney General. He says, start this process. Let's look into whether this should be descheduled. Attorney General kicks it to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Then they have to go and do a bunch of research. They have to look at the research that's out there in cannabis, but they also could say, okay, there's some research out there, but the government didn't do it, or people that we trust, entities we trust didn't do it. So we need to wait for new research to be done. That could possibly happen. So there's a lot of, this takes time because there's, you know, trials that have to be run, and then they have to review all the results. So that's what's going to start now. And then once that process completes, if the Secretary of Health and Human Services says, based on the studies I'm seeing, there's a medical need for cannabis, he'll recommend to the Attorney General, well, you should deschedule it. Attorney General generally never goes against the Secretary. So if the Secretary says deschedule it, Attorney General will deschedule it. Then we have things that can happen like, FDA approval, more research can happen easier in cannabis. That's still a problem. And what investors are looking for is that uplisting of U.S. operating cannabis companies and some tax breaks. Because right now, cannabis companies are considered illegal. They don't get any tax breaks. They're paying like 50% tax rates. That would fall a lot. But generally, if we're looking at the timeline of this, this should take a minimum of 2 years, and it could be longer. So definitely it's moving the needle. I think from an investor's point of view, this is net positive because a lot of these companies are still borrowing money, okay? They don't generate free cash flow, which is the cash the business generates. You got to reinvest. Do you have any left over? No, they have to keep borrowing. So if investors are on the sidelines, some of them might say, okay, the government is warming up to cannabis. That makes me more comfortable giving these guys a little more money. So on the margin, I think this is positive news for cannabis companies' ability to borrow. But as far as a catalyst, a descheduling, lower taxes, uplisting, that's still a long way away. That's going to be far past midterms because this process just takes time with research.
Yeah, so we got that. It was an interesting, that's phenomenal breakdown. And, if you follow cannabis stocks, and you guys know Scott's the professor on this, and it's a great window here of trying to just highlight, what it exactly means. So you're talking 2 years, right, Scott? Like, basically, that's the best case.
Yeah, like Biden, I think Biden might have made a comment. He wants to kind of push it forward 2 years. The thing is, well, we have a presidential election in 2 years. Yeah. So that's the risk too. This thing is moving along. Then we get a Republican president and he says, I don't want to recommend the Attorney General do anything. Let's cut this off. So there are some unknowns here, but in the interim, it could help with funding for the market at the very least.
And, I'll say this as a backdrop, right? If this was like, if the market was go and this was happening, I would reckon, the stocks would just, obviously we had the move higher the day of this announcement, and then they paired back a lot of their gains. As has been very traditional in cannabis stocks over the last year and a half plus. That's kind of been a feature. But I would say this is a lot of times news like this, Scott, in the market paradigm that it's in. So like if you're in a if you're in a bullish context, people are always willing to see rose-colored glasses. Let's go and say phenomenal. But in the bearish tilt that we have right now, people are like, I don't got time for this. I don't got time for this nonsense.
People are in a more skeptical mood, and I think what we've seen lately is there is kind of a set pool of retail investors that are playing in cannabis right now. Yeah. So unfortunately, from the flow front, it helps stocks go up if there's new money coming in. And so you have some retail investors who may have had a little bit of dry powder. They rushed in on this news. Some hedge funds may have too, because they didn't know all the details. Mm-hmm. They dug in. For you to get follow through, you need either a bull market or you need big investors saying something's changed structurally in the cannabis market. I'm moving my billions in. We didn't see that. We just saw a quick pump. And now everyone was doing the math and looking through the process and saying, all right, this is going to take 2 years. Yeah. I'm not putting the rest of my money in at this point.
Yeah. And I will say this, what's interesting and just something to obviously a lot of cannabis listeners to hear, right? This really is a casino, Scott. And so I think someone had shown the number of people buying calls on the MSOS ETF. That's the U.S. cannabis ETF. It was just like spiked mega. And it just, to me,
on this news.
Yeah. To me, and obviously if anyone's involved in options, it's like, you got to be buying that call before this, Scott. You don't be buying it the day. Basically volatility is blowing out and, tons getting priced in. All those guys who bought that super spike day of calls are now deeply underwater. Right. Like it's just, call buying and, Scott and I, have spent quite a lot of time, working through
learning options. And teaching about options.
Yeah, for sure. And for us, you know, we've taken a different tact on options. It's just, it's very much, listen, we have a fundamental view. How can I augment it? How can I enhance it through options where I get, you know, I just get that, I get that lift. But because we're value-based investors, the idea is to buy that put option on Norwegian Cruise Lines, you know, when it's not, you know, when it's cheap, right? You're not going to win when, you know, when they tell you COVID's here, like that's too freaking late. You know what I mean? You got
to, then it gets really hard, right? There's much less of a window to make money.
No. So if I can kind of impart anything on anyone, you know, mucking around in options, I'd advise you, if you're not, you know, if it's not something you do in a, on a daily basis, don't. And B, what you want it to be is a contra investment, right? You want it to be, you know, when people don't believe it's going to get to those prices, you want to be buying it on the cheap. And that does not happen the day, you know, the announcement comes. Like, you know that everyone's flooding into the gates there. You are not the smart investor at that point. And just to see that kind of level of a call option buying, I felt like, ugh. You know, there's been a lot of people.
People have already suffered enough in cannabis, and then they're doing that to themselves.
Oh, it's brutal. It just highlights how much of all of these markets, Scott, have really turned into casinos, right? There was an interesting thread on AMC and all that sort of stuff, but it's been just so crazy. That side is just so wild. Now, OPEC, Scott, what do you say? That's some news.
Yeah, so OPEC was big for, you know, everything going on with energy shortages. They kind of stuck their finger in the eye of Biden, basically. So OPEC said that they're going to cut their quotas. I think it was up to 2 million barrels a day. Now, if you look at what OPEC's producing versus what they said they were going to produce, they're already way below their quotas. So they're having issues producing at full capacity. But they said that they're going to cut it even further, trying to tighten the market. Now, you can't blame OPEC. They're a cartel for a reason. Their whole point is to cut supply when demand is falling, which it could be now if we're heading into some people are worried about a recession. Usually in recessions, demand falls. So OPEC's job would be you cut supply out of the market to balance that falling demand and you keep prices up. Now, Tom, like, what do you think this says about OPEC and more specifically Saudi Arabia's relationship with the U.S.? Because it seems like the U.S. was not happy about this.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, Biden was clearly, you know, pivoting to Saudi. Clearly the bad man in the room here is Putin, and the view is, listen, the world as a whole should do everything in its power to ensure, you know, Putin basically is economically broken, right? Long and short of this, right? So what Biden wanted is, you know, for OPEC, specifically Saudi and partners to max produce here, right? Like, because every dollar that the oil price stays higher, who does that make, you know, who does that, you know, give funds to? That's, you know, directly to Putin, right? And so the view here is, listen, act like a good global citizen here. OPEC should take its, take the lumps on behalf of
The lumps for Europe and North America is basically what Europe and North America are telling OPEC that.
Well, exactly, right? And
it was probably a little bit of that. You know, Biden made a trip recently to Saudi Arabia, and he says, "Look, we've been longtime friends. I'm asking you to produce.
Yeah,
just help us keep energy prices down for Europe, for us to stick it to Putin."
Yep.
And last week was basically OPEC saying, no, we're going to do what we want.
Yeah. And, you know, that whole idea of, you know, the cozy relationship there between the U.S. and Saudi. And I think a lot of that gets called into question right now. Right. In terms of who are America's true allies. Right. And again, bigger picture here, all of this now. When you think about the energy crisis and how basically this is literally like Europe and America in, you know, Europe panicking, right? This is a panicking in the sense that now you're relying on a basically a body that's meant to like prop up the oil price. Like make no mistake, OPEC's not there to drop the oil price. They're there to take care of their own goddamn interests, right? It's not like this is some surprise. You know,
this is not who you want to lean on.
No, this is not like, you know,
to lower your energy bill.
No, this is not UN Children AIDS or whatever. You know what I mean? This is like, this is truly like they're there to, you know, make sure that they're printing. And the takeaway here is obviously, you know, the alliance is being called into question. Putin, and it really highlights the bipolar world's got, you know, this is the, in terms of you now have in this, what, because of this, you know, what's transpired to OPEC, et cetera. Again, it's just showing that there are, I tweeted this right before we had an axis of evil. Now, Scott, now we have an axis of oil, right? Basically, those that have oil and those that do not, and those that do not, well, good luck, right? I'm not going to throw you a lifeline. I don't care if you think, you know, Putin is X, Y, Z. Doesn't bother me. I don't really want $60 oil. And if, you know, if that's, that doesn't, you know, if that's not,
I got mouths to feed. That's what OPEC kind of says. I got mouths to feed. I need oil at a certain price. If demand's falling off a bit, I'm going to cut supply. I'm going to keep it up.
Exactly. So, you know, that's,
you know, for me, Tom, the world seems a little confused right now because we have an energy shortage. So what you should be doing is producing more energy, right? To make up for that.
Yes.
And the world just isn't, they don't seem to be getting it, at least the developed world. They're still talking about shutting down nuclear plants and ESG emissions and all this stuff when it's like there's an emergency going on right now. You got to get, if you're burning oil or you're burning gas or coal or whatever, you just need people to produce more of it right now, get through this period, and then go back to what you're doing. They just seem to kind of be acting like nothing's different. And it's good. It's making this whole situation worse, and it's going to make it go on for longer than it needs to.
Yeah, like, you know, they're not getting at the heart of the problem. It's all just very like upside down backwards. And, you know, it just, I guess, you know, what ends up happening, Scott, is you get a decade of people getting conditioned to low inflation. You know, my toys are cheap. You know, my widgets, you know,
whatever powers my toys is cheap.
Yeah, like it's just exactly. It's so you just have this malaise. And again, you thought you could have it all. You could have the, you know, green energy being 100% of the grid. You can have all that you want. You're America. You're Europe. Well, you know, you wake up and you realize, wait a minute, you know, and the people producing this stuff aren't your buddies. Literally.
No, well, it worked for Europe because they could just keep cutting their fossil fuels because, they were getting it from Russia.
Yeah.
But then you have a risk of you have someone giving it to you who stops giving it to you. And then what do? Because you can't rely on all that energy built. Yeah. The whole point is to build new sources of energy that'll take over. But we've seen they're having a problem with that.
Yeah, exactly.
When push comes to shove.
And so, you know, it comes back to our discussion with Alberto from Largo talking about energy storage. You know, once you have renewables, you got to have energy storage. It's a really dynamic, like, you know, we're going to piece together the broader puzzle here, and we're doing it episode by episode with Margot's Energy Fix series. But very fascinating stuff, like, Scott, you know, one big part is geopolitical. The other big part is rocks and, you know, why we haven't attacked that. And the other part is how you get renewables into the grid in a way that it can sustain. So lots of stuff to cover here. That's the OPEC thing. Scott, technology, you got some interesting insights here.
Yeah, so I'm always watching the tech sector, especially software as a service, which is kind of like a niche. It's, you know, the companies that are at the most cutting edge in tech. Historically, they've lost a lot of money, but they've grown really fast because, again, the strategy you're playing here is data's growing really fast. I personally create a lot of data more than I did the year before. Everyone else does. So these companies are monetizing that data. We're just, everything's being digitized. But what's interesting is these guys are higher out on the risk spectrum because they lose so much money. So you're not getting profits. You're not having returns. So you can look at the stock multiple of these companies. It moves around a lot based on how bullish or bearish people are if they're worried about the future. So I use it kind of as a bellwether for me to see what the market sentiment is towards. Are they looking to make money or are they looking to preserve their money? And so I just wanted to talk about some of the trends I'm seeing lately. Now, the big one here is, it helps to separate this industry into three buckets based on growth. So you have your the fastest growing guys, you have kind of the average growing guys, and then you have the slow ones. And the market generally kind of throws out the slow ones because they say, well, it's a competitive industry. You've gone X growth. You're not making a lot of cash flow yet, but you're already X growth. So maybe your technology or your business just doesn't work very well. Mid growth, I wouldn't put it in that brush. That might be where some values end up coming from because, you know, the price you pay for a mid-growth company is usually a lot lower than the high growth. Is that justified? That's what we're going to find out. This is still a new industry. But what's happening lately, so number one, is there risk on or risk off based on software as a service companies? Still risk off. If you look at the overall multiple of revenue that investors are willing to pay, it's at its low post, COVID, basically. So we got a big spike up. It was running at about 10 times revenue, which is still high for both sectors. But for this sector, it's par for the course. COVID led to a big pull forward in demand for some of these companies. Some of them, it may just be structurally better demand. So they went to 20 times as an industry. Now they've been declining ever since the end of 2021. And we're now at back down at lows. So we've fallen all the way from 20 times to 6. So as a group, there still market is cautious. There's not a risk on mood. There was a little bit of a bounce back, but it's generally still been down all year. But there's actually a different story coming out. If you look at the highest growth companies, those are the most expensive ones, but people consider them to be the best because they're still in so much demand. Mm-hmm. Since their lows in May, the most expensive companies, their multiples are up 80%. While for the mid-growth companies, their multiples declined a little bit more. And for the low-growth companies, they've declined as well. So there's a bifurcation, we call it. There's a difference emerging between those fast-growing, best-in-class companies and everyone else. And I think that's a risk. I don't think that's an opportunity. Because if you look, this industry is so new that the data we use generally only goes back to like 2017.
Yeah.
If you look at this industry, when people were worried about economic growth at the end, remember Christmas 2018, there was a little bit of a taper tantrum and stocks fell. The high growth stocks multiple fell almost to touch the mid growth, and low growth was right there. So in bear markets, when people are worried, multiples converge. They almost they're very close together. They're not very different. But right now we have the highest growth guys are at 12 times sales, while mid growth guys are only half that at 6. That's a very wide spread into a market where we haven't seen a slowdown in the fastest growing companies. What if they do? In this industry, if you show a little bit of a growth slowdown, your stock falls 20-30% a day. Like, it's rapid and brutal.
Yeah.
So betting that these companies are still the best in class and that all the growth slowdowns we're seeing won't hit them at all, just, you know, it hits every other sector, but not software. Yeah. That's a big risk you're taking with multiples up. You know, they've doubled since the lows of this year, while the rest of the sector is at new lows.
Okay, so I got an interesting postulation here for you, Scott, and you know, hear me out on this. So right now, the traditional view is, okay, listen, if you're high growth, you should be higher multiple, right? And if you're mm-hmm. mid-growth, obviously, you know, less than that, and low growth, less than that. But what, and you mentioned that there was a point earlier in this year where the high growth guys were basically trading at the mid-growth multiples. That got me to think about something interesting here, is could there be, just thinking out loud, in this new dynamic, because I know mid-growth guys probably do a lot more cash flow than the high growth guys, where potentially high growth guys can trade through and below mid growth guys on multiples, because it's not, you know, the revenue is not as important as, listen, after I take away the costs and everything servicing, is really cash flow at the end of the day. And likely the company that's growing more mid and, you know, pedestrian is going to be much more closer to the cost cutting, the cost cutting side of the world or cost management side of the world than that high growth, high flyer, just spend it on anything. It almost becomes a risk that you're a high growth name.
You've nailed it, because what's happened is the group that's in that high growth group, it's turned over. It's different than it was 6-9 months ago. The market has moved towards your free cash flow positive and you're growing fast. It used to be what's your growth at any cost. So there's a risk here that these guys, they have a little bit of cushion because they're free cash flow positive, but if their growth slows at all, they might fall out of that bucket.
Yeah.
So that is what you're saying. So like if I had to look for downside protection, potentially some diamonds in the rough, I would look at the mid growth because they don't have that risk that they're kind of their technology's old. The management team can't do it in the low growth, but they still have some good growth and they have cash flow.
Yeah, wonderful. So that, Scott, that was a good wrap. We, a lot of great topics. Obviously, guys, we'll stay tuned for our one-on-one leaders in the new economy series, which we're very excited about. Important, the Battery Metals Conference is next week, Thursday. And if you haven't tuned in already, please check it out. We put out a great piece with the one and only Doomberg. That was last week, and that was the history of energy. Scott, I don't know if I'm missing anything, but I think I just
want to remind people, if you have any questions for any of the management teams we're talking to, if you've been thinking about battery metals and you have a question that's just burning up your brain, follow us on Twitter. You can ask us a question, or the best way is if you're on the email list, you can just reach out to us that way. That's what we like to do. We like to give you guys an opportunity to ask these thought leaders, your own questions.
Exactly. And also in the coming weeks, we'll also have the GRZZ quarterly letter, which if you want to read the Q1 one, you go to etf.grizzle.com. You'll get the details there. And that's like really, that's our, the place where we get to write our medium, longer term views and also in the context of what's been done so far.
Exactly.
Guys, thank you for joining us on the Grizzle Pod. That is episode 35. We'll see you again very soon. Thank you.
We're out of here, guys. Till next time.